Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of the Twisted Sisters True Crime Podcast. I'm your host, Erin.
And I'm your co-host, Rocio.
I'm pretty excited about this week's episode, mainly because of the title, The Ken and Barbie Killers. For those of you who don't know the story, then you're in for a crazy ride. I tried to keep the description for this week's episode short and sweet because I didn't want to give you guys too much just yet.
Okay, so I low-key feel like I've kind of heard of this story, but I don't remember it.
Okay, so
like, I don't remember the details, but I feel like I've heard the name.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, maybe you'll learn some new information that you haven't heard before about the case.
Okay. I'm excited.
Me too. So
I'm excited for you to say it, to tell it to me.
I know, a different take on it than you probably heard before.
Yeah.
So this week's episode comes from Canada, and I believe this is the first story that we've told that comes from Canada, if I'm not mistaken.
Ooh, cool.
Yes, it was funny kind of watching like clips from the like case and hearing people talk, because you know they talk a little bit differently in like Canada. Like they said heinous, but it was heinous or something like that, and I was like, what?
Yeah, it is a little bit different.
Like, they just have a different like
dialect,
a little bit of a tweak on it.
Yeah,
a little bit. So before I jump into this story, our trigger warnings for this episode include harm to minors and rape. So our story begins with our kin, which is Paul Bernardo. Paul was born on August 27th, 1964, in Ontario, Canada, to Kenneth and Marilyn Bernardo. So the Bernardo family, they were pretty financially well off. You would probably consider them a stable middle-class family. And as a young boy, Paul was described as always happy, and he smiled a lot. He was described as polite and well-mannered, and he did pretty good in school. But beneath that charming facade, however, Paul had developed dark sexual fantasies and enjoyed humiliating women in public and beating the women that he dated.
Ew. Oh my God.
Yeah. Red flag, red flag. So he's kind of like that charming douchebag. You know what I mean?
Ew. I can't stand him. Ew.
No, already. Like he, no.
Yeah.
So when he was just 16, his mother told him that he was conceived from an illegitimately, like, during an extramarital affair. So he was disgusted by that, and he began insulting her, and he would refer to her as a slob and a whore. His own mother.
That is so disgusting. Ew.
Mm-hmm. And they're
like, why?
That's not even, like, his fault. You know what I mean? He wasn't even born. Like, yeah, he might have been disappointed that that's how he was born, but I would never talk to my mother that way.
But, like, you were still born that way. Like, because of that, you were born. And you're still going to be like, oh, well, you shouldn't have done it because now you're a whore. What? But you're born.
Yeah, and it's like, okay,
you're alive.
Well, yeah, if she hadn't have done it, then you would be not here.
Yeah, like, how annoying.
Mm-hmm. So right there, I included a picture of Paul. It's probably not the best picture because it is a mugshot, but I just wanted you to see kind of like,
put a face to a name.
Yeah, put a face to the name.
Okay. He's like white. He has, what is that, like brown kind of wavy hair. It's short and blue eyes.
Mm-hmm. He just kind of looks like your typical like,
yeah,
college frat boy.
Yeah, he really does.
Speaking of college, he attended the Sir Wilfrid Laurier College. I can't even talk. Sir Wilfrid Laurier
Collegiate
Institute in Scarborough, Canada. That's a tongue full.
Or Scarborough, Canada.
But then, yeah, after he graduated.
That was a long sentence for you to get through.
Yeah, like Sir Wilfrid, like too much. After he graduated from there, though, he went to a very easily pronounced name, University of Toronto.
Scarborough.
Like, good Lord. Yeah, Scarborough. This was in 1982, and he worked for Amway. Now, do you know what Amway is?
No, what is that?
So when I looked it up, a lot of things came up, like it was kind of like a pyramid scheme, kind of like It Works, or like that legging company, the LuLaRue.
Uh-huh.
Basically, it's short for American Way, and they sold health, beauty, and home care products.
Okay.
So basically, he was a salesman for all these products.
Oh, yeah.
Which I thought was kind of like weird, but I mean, more power to him. He kind of fell short to the sales culture, and it deeply affected him. And when him and his friends would hang out, they would practice their pickup techniques on young women they met in bars. And surprisingly, they were pretty successful at it.
Ew.
It's kind of like he used... Huh? What? We both stopped.
Go ahead. I was like, go ahead.
It's kind of like he used his salesman attitude to pick up these women, where it was all bullshit, but like... it got the women.
But like, I thought that you were gonna say that it was shitty, like they didn't do good, because you had mentioned where they fell short to the sales culture. So I kind of figured they weren't good at it. So I was like, huh, they're not gonna get no women.
By falling short to it, he kind of got so wrapped up into it that it became his whole like personality.
Oh.
And then he dragged it into women. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, no. Like, it just became something that he just thought about at all times.
And he used it in his attitude with picking up women. Like, they were sales. They weren't, you know, women. They were transactions.
Like, kind of like a game. A competition.
A competition. Okay, gotcha. So you can get this many. So, Paul was obviously good looking and charming, and an unfortunate combination that he used to manipulate women and take them off their guard. And before long, he would give in to a far darker impulse. So starting in May of 1987, the suburb of Scarborough, Ontario, was plagued by a series of horrific crimes. So in the early hours of May 4th in 1987, a young woman getting off the bus was grabbed and brutally raped near her parents' home. Over the next week alone, there would be two more similar assaults.
Oh my gosh.
These women were all between the ages of 15 and 21, and the attacks all included beatings, intense verbal abuse, and dire threats to discourage victims from going to the police. This led the authorities to conclude that they had all been perpetrated by the same man, whom the newspapers quickly dubbed as the Scarborough racist.
Wow.
Rapist, wow.
What did you say?
I said racist.
Racist.
I said Scarborough.
Damn. No, it's...
Let me try that again.
It's also
damn.
The R word, but rapist. Not that R word.
Wrong one. So, the newspaper quickly dubbed the Scarborough rapist. So, Rosie, I want you to take a look at the composite sketch that the Metro Police created of that boy next door type of suspect. And tell me what you think. Does it resemble Paul?
It does. The hair just looks a little bit lighter, but literally white dude, blue eyes, typical face features. They look the same.
Yeah, and I think like that picture of Paul that you first saw, you could see like he had a very outlined chin.
Oh, yeah.
Like
his
jawline was very defined, and this sketch has a very defined like outline of his jaw and chin.
It does, yeah.
I think it's crazy. So during his nearly
It's right on.
You think it's spot on?
Mm-hmm.
Minus like the hair, I think a little bit. Like it needs to be a little bit more fucked up and curly.
Oh yeah, true.
But like the eyes, the jawline, the complexion.
Yeah.
Yeah. So during his nearly 5-year rampage as the Scarborough rapist, Paul raped and attempted to rape at least 19 young women. And this was the only like official count. There's no telling if there's more. You know what I mean? These are the only ones that they found physical proof of.
He's gone like caught. Kind
yes.
of.
Or that he, you know, might have accounted for himself. Mm-hmm. So the victims were all young women and often grabbed around bus stops, although at least one 15-year-old was attacked in her own bedroom.
Wow.
And we will get into that story too.
Okay.
So a couple of Paul's victims managed to fight him off and was actually questioned twice by the police, but he was never named an official suspect. It wasn't until May of 1990 that one of Paul's victims was able to give a police officer an accurate description of her attacker. And by then, the Scarborough racist had become even more unhinged.
Wow.
So now we're going to bring in our Barbie, Carla Homolka.
Homolka. Okay. So up to this point, before he meets this Carla, he's already officially raped and tortured 19 women, right?
Well, not all 19. So some of them, this was, the 19 was the official count of how many. But
I'm dumb.
After all of them, yes. So what we're about to get.
After all of them.
Okay, what we're about to get into is more of it. Well, he did countless rapes beforehand, but it wasn't until he met her that things started to go even further downhill.
Okay, I get you. I get you. I don't know why I was thinking the other thing.
Yes, yes. So take a picture, look at the picture of Carla.
What? Yeah, Carla literally looks like she's straight from the 80s, the 70s.
Yeah, with the poof.
Volume hair.
Mm-hmm. And she kind of does look like your typical.
Very basic, to say the least.
Yeah, your typical blonde.
Yeah.
So when Paul and Carla met in 1987, it was when he was 23 and she was 17. So it's, I think that's a little odd to begin with.
Yeah, a little bit. But it happens more often than you think, because like they're like, oh, well, I'm just about to be 18 anyway, so it's okay.
23 and 17, a little odd. I mean, it's not the worst.
I don't know. But still, it's like one away from 16.
Right. So, I mean, it's not as bad as it would be if she was a little bit younger.
Yeah.
But Carla.
Wait, do you think like it really does happen more than we think? Is that a bad thing to say?
Yeah, it's kind of odd to think about.
Like, I just like.
So. Carla was born to Dorothy and Carl Homaka.
I'm double thinking that now.
What?
Because it's like, they are kind of long. Yeah. I take it back. I do not condone anything like that.
I mean, yeah. Still underage.
Literally. Because, like, that was just last year for us. Well, basically.
You're like, no.
Yeah.
No. It is weird, though, because to think of my headspace at 17 and my headspace at 23... completely different.
Bro, it's actually, it may not seem, is a lot.
It may not
though,
seem like a lot.
18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23. Might that's 6 years.
Not seem like a lot in age difference, but mentally, totally two different people.
That's a pretty long time. Like, why do we not think that's a long time? But that is.
Holy shit.
Like, the numbers, you know?
I don't know, but me and Kale are 4 years apart.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kale and I are 4 years apart, but I mean, we didn't meet till I was 24 and he was 27. So, like, we were already way past that, and now we're 25 and 29. So, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not like we met when I was 17 and he was.
You're already officially legal. Like, you're good. You can do anything except rent a car.
Right? Crazy.
I think that's so crazy.
I do too. Okay. Anywho.
I just wanted to say that little clip of. No.
I take it back.
I don't condone anybody dating underage people.
No, it's creepy.
It shouldn't happen. It shouldn't be a common thing.
No, yeah. It should not be common. Like, if you're going to think about it, I was 17 when we were seniors in high school. To think about dating somebody 23 then, it still is like, no. Okay. Anywho.
I would have definitely felt like I was dating somebody very grown if I was dating a 23-year-old.
And think of it the opposite way. That is true. Think of it the opposite way. Could you imagine being 23 and dating somebody that was still in high school?
Exactly, because you're like, oh, I can't call you. No. You're in school right now. Oh, you can text me because you're on break. Not work break, but like snack break.
Yeah, ew. Yeah, like, ew, no. Okay.
Yeah, it's very different.
It is. Let's get on to a little bit about
back to the case.
A little bit about Carla. So she was born to Dorothy and Carl Homaka in Ontario in 1970.
Homaka.
I literally listen to it on all the clips that I watch, and every time I get done watching them, I'm like,
you fucking forget.
What the fuck? How do you say
you're
it?
You're like, wait a second.
Yeah. I'm like, what the fuck is it? Anywho, not important. She was the eldest of three siblings, and she was described as a well-adjusted, pretty, smart, and popular child with a fondness for animals, and this led her to start working at a veterinarian clinic after high school.
Okay.
Just like Paul, there was nothing out of the ordinary about her outward appearance that even hinted at anything dark lurking, you know, beneath the surface. But the attraction between Paul and Carla was immediate, which only intensified when Paul discovered that unlike other girls he had dated, Carla shared the same sick fantasies. Mm-hmm. So there's a picture of them together. I mean, they look happy.
Yeah, they do. They have those creepy smiles.
Yeah, it's weird to look at these pictures, like, before you know the story and think, oh, they just look like a happy couple.
Mm-hmm.
And then you hear the story and you're like, ooh, sick.
You are so fucking sick.
So, this is going to be another hard word for me to say. But they begin to quickly have a sadomasochistic relationship.
I think it's sadomasochistic. Masochistic.
There you go.
Yeah, sadomasochistic. That sounds good. Yeah.
So I had to look up what that was, honestly, because I had no clue.
Okay. Me
but
too.
When I looked it up, Google defined it as an interaction, especially a sexual activity, in which one person enjoys inflicting physical or mental suffering on another person who derives pleasure from experiencing that pain. So in this case, with Paul and Carla, Paul acted as the abuse master and Carla was like the willing slave.
Wow, that's a...
Does that make sense? Kind of like BDSM. Kind of like even dark... Yeah, like BDSM times 10, like... Very dark.
But like this category is like very real, right? Like very...
What do you mean very real?
I don't know. I feel like it's very degrading to... It's usually the woman that's like the person, right?
Yeah. It's usually, you know, it's kind of like that submissive dominant thing. But like we already see that Paul humiliates women in public. So to find somebody who enjoys it just as much as he does, it probably goes to extremes.
Probably. Ew.
So, yeah. So the whole time that they dated, Paul was also brutally raping the girls in Scarborough with Carla's knowledge and approval.
That's so weird. That's so sick.
Because remember, if you think back, yeah, the rape started in May of 1987 and Paul and Carla met sometime in 1987. So all while he was raping these women, she knew about it. And they were dating.
And she was giving the approval and being like, yeah, you can do it.
Yeah, go ahead, you know?
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. So as their relationship progressed, they eventually got engaged. And then Paul began to tease Carla about her being used goods because he wasn't her first sexual relationship. Ew, red flag, red flag.
Paul began teasing Carla about... being used good since he wasn't the first guy with her.
Yep. He started to get more like possessive and just...
And that's so disgusting.
Yeah. And like...
And it's like to think, I don't know, you're out here raping these women. You don't even know if they're virgins and you're taking their first time away, not giving them the chance to pick the first person they want to be with.
Yeah. And
you're like criticizing Carla now, being like, you whore.
And also he's already slept with other people. So it's like, you're used goods too, yeah. Bro.
Yeah. Like you're not like a fucking shiny diamond.
Exactly. So
ew.
We're about to get into the saddest part of the whole story.
Okay.
Honestly. So after Paul had been saying that she was used goods, Carla started to freak out that she would lose him to someone more innocent. So she offered him something he couldn't refuse. Her own little sister's virginity as a Christmas gift. What the fuck?
Wow.
That'd be sitting here saying, like, let's say, like, you were in that type of relationship and the guy asked you if he could, or, you know, you were like, oh, I'm so scared, and you offered your little sister... No, you wouldn't.
That is so disgusting.
But of course, Paul was like, okay.
Literally.
I accept. So before I get into the story, though, here's a picture of Tammy. And at the time, she was 15.
Wow, she was so young.
She's a cute little girl.
Yeah.
Yeah. She just looks happy and sweet.
Mm-hmm.
So on December 23rd, 1990, while at a Christmas party at the Homica family home, Carla spiked her sister's drink with some animal anesthetics that she had stolen from the clinic where she worked. That night, while the rest of the family was asleep and Tammy was unconscious, Carla and Paul decided that this was going to be the time. But Tammy kept waking up in and out of consciousness, so Carla had to hold a halothane soaked cloth over her sister's mouth while they took turns raping her while videotaping the whole incident.
Oh my gosh, like your own sister is raping you?
Yeah, and they videotaped the whole thing too.
Wow.
So the halo thing is like a clear, heavy, and colorless liquid with a sweet and non-irritating odor used to, you know, put people under. It's like a inhalation anesthetic.
Yeah, you just inhale it. Okay.
Yeah. So when Tammy began choking up vomit, the couple panicked and tried to hide the evidence before calling an ambulance. And Tammy never regained consciousness and was pronounced dead at the hospital.
Wow. They yeah. fucking killed her.
Yeah. And although the mysterious chemical burn on her face was noted, the drugs in her system were not detected, and her death was ruled as an accident as a result of choking on her own vomit from alcohol poisoning.
Because they were drinking earlier that night?
Yes, because the family had a Christmas party and she had been drinking just a little bit, but not enough to get her that fucked up. It was what Carla spiked in her drink.
Damn.
It was also noted that on previous accounts that Paul had already had like a little bit of a fascination with Tammy, and that one incident they were drinking a lot, and I don't know where Carla was, but Paul was with Tammy and they had made out before, and then he had told her about it. So I think this was before all this that had happened, and then Carla was like, ooh, I'm gonna let him have sex with my sister because I already know the attraction is there. Does that make sense?
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So after...
So he kind of cheated on her?
Kind of in a way, yes. I mean, not in a way, but yes.
Well, actually, I wouldn't even say that because he literally goes out and rapes women. Like, yeah, so I'm going to take that back.
Like,
I would take that back.
I don't even know what you would call it. I mean, yes, in all technical terms, yes, he is cheating, but it's for a sick, twisted reason. So I don't even know what you would call that because... Half the time, Carla was okay with it.
Yeah, that's why I'm like, I'm just going to take that back because you're fucking, I don't even know.
So Paul seemed to take Tammy's death to heart and often played a video of her to friends while crying. But at Paul's, like, insistence, Carla would dress up in her sister's clothes and they would have sex on her dead sister's bed.
That is very... I don't even know the word. Like, that's just sick.
Disturbing?
Yeah, disturbing. Like, you like that?
I don't understand how people can get off with that. That's disturbing. I mean, they have to be some type of messed up in the head.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So, stemming from the fact that he got away with murder, his dark fantasies increased. And in June of 1991, he kidnapped 14-year-old Leslie Mahaffey, just days before he married Carla. He forced the petrified, blindfolded young girl into his home where Carla waited. Carla watched while Paul raped the teen for hours on end before she was choked to death, although who actually did the killing remains a mystery. Paul insists that Carla killed Leslie out of jealousy, while Carla said Paul squeezed the girl's throat so tight that she eventually died from lack of air. They eventually chopped up the girl into pieces and buried her in cement.
And that was Leslie Mahaffey. Mahaffey?
Yes.
Aww, she's very Mahaffey. Pretty. She has long, silky hair.
She's yeah. cute. Some people say that she kind of resembled Tammy, and that's why he picked her.
Oh.
Yeah, so it was kind of like a dark whatever. So
even darker.
Yeah.
Like you keep being stuck on her for some reason.
So Paul and Carla got married on June 29th of 1991, and their wedding ceremony included their entrance in a white horse drawn carriage. So all while this was happening for them at their wedding, Leslie's remains were found on the very same day in Ontario's Lake Gibson, weighed down by the concrete blocks that she was buried in. When Paul realized that the investigators didn't suspect him, at least on the surface, it only boosted his confidence and convinced him that he was invincible.
Wow. I'm sure it did. I'm sure it played into their egos.
Oh, yeah. They were like, oh, shit. How long can we keep doing this?
Yeah. Like, oh, like,
nobody thinks
it's
us. Look at us. Yeah. We just had this fancy wedding and nobody thinks it's us.
Wow.
And you can see their pictures from their wedding. Very, very 80s, early 90s. Like, but it just goes to show that they were just cheesing, having a good old time while this body from the girl that they had raped and killed, like, was found.
It just shows that there was no remorse at all.
Oh, yeah. No remorse.
Like, no fucks given.
Mm-hmm. So it continued, and in April of 1992, he kidnapped 15-year-old Kristen French. While Paul was the one who brought Leslie into their home, it was Carla who lured Kristen into Paul's car. So they had stopped on the side of the road at this church, and they had seen Kristen there. So Carla asked her to come closer to give directions, and then Paul came from behind and grabbed her and forced her into the vehicle. A series of rapes and beatings came next, as she had had with her sister Tammy. Carla participated in sexually assaulting French before the girl was brutally killed.
Aww.
She was a pretty girl too.
Yeah, she was.
She looked very happy.
Mm-hmm. And she had brown curly hair.
Mm-hmm. She looked a little bit different than the than Tammy and Leslie.
Yeah, I guess because she just wasn't blonde.
But still, just a
nothing. She wasn't blonde and no blue eyes.
Yeah, just a happy. Yeah. So 12 days later, detectives found Kristen's naked body in a ditch in North Burlington, Ontario. This time, however, an acquaintance gave Paul's name to the detective as a possible murder suspect. He was questioned in his home and nothing came of it. Like, how many times does this man have to be questioned before they're like, oh, maybe.
That's so annoying.
Because, I mean, he's already been questioned. Yeah, he's already been questioned at least 2 or 3 times.
That we see that happening a lot in our cases where these prolific serial killers run into cops a lot. And they just get, like, a little question asked here and there. And not really, like...
Yeah, and that's it.
Yeah. I'm like, wow.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense to me. Because, you know, if they would have questioned him the first time and caught him, then none of this other stuff would have happened. Because the first time he was questioned was when the rapes began, back in 1987. And now we're in 1992, and he's still out here doing this, and it's only getting worse. Now they're killing people. But the couple's killing spree came to an end on January 5th of 1993, when Carla had been severely beaten by Paul and moved in with relatives. After confessing the crimes to her family, they turned to the police. When detectives interviewed Carla, she was reluctant to open up until they offered her a plea deal that would have her out of prison within 12 years. So Paul was arrested, but during questioning, he insisted that he never killed anyone, though he did admit to a number of sexual assaults. So there are the pictures of Carla after she was beaten by Paul. She got 2 big old black eyes, and it looks like it just beat the soul out of her because she just doesn't look so much like herself because she just looks so unhappy. Though Paul had a long history of committing rapes, he never killed any of the women he sexually assaulted in Scarborough. The first murder occurred when he took up with Carla, when the pair killed her sister. So Paul was charged and convicted of numerous counts of rape, including the Scarborough assaults, for which DNA testing had finally implicated him, and 2 counts of murder. Carla, on the other hand, was charged and convicted of manslaughter in exchange for testifying against Paul.
Do you feel like those things should be allowed?
While some people agreed that Carla deserved...
Yeah, that's what I was just going to get into. Go ahead.
The what?
I said that's what I was just about to get into, but I'll let you finish.
Okay. So while people agreed that Carla... While some people agreed that Carla deserved a lesser sentence, believing she was scared for her life and had been beaten into submission by Paul, the overwhelming majority of Canadians who followed the case were appalled that she had gotten off so easy. Needless to say, when she was released from prison in 2005, the public erupted in protest.
I'm glad, because personally, yeah, I feel like you got it too easily because you were bringing the women to him. It wasn't like you were really beaten into submission. You just got beat up that one time.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think she played a lot of her innocence and the fact that she was a woman. Yeah. And... Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So the community's outrage obviously didn't escape Carla, and shortly after her release, she hid away in Guadalupe, an island in the Caribbean, with her new husband. I'm gonna say his name is Thierry Bordialis.
Thierry? Yeah.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. But he happened to be her former lawyer's brother, which I found kind of interesting.
Wow.
And after spending more than a decade there and having 3 kids, she resurfaced in 2014. She had been living in Quebec under a assumed name, but in 2016, her cover was blown by a reporter with LA Presse, or probably La Presse.
With La Presse?
Yeah, La Presse. Who spotted her husband and basically revealed that Carla and her family had moved back to her hometown in Canada. So Carla's new husband is quoted saying, "If they're worried, all they have to do is move. We're free. We're in a free country. Has something, anything happened over the past 10 years? So why are they worried? I don't see why they're worried." So basically he's saying, if anybody has a problem with my wife being here, then move.
Yeah, whatever.
So below that, you can see the pictures of her from when she was released, or not released, but found back in the public. You can see she's not happy about people taking her picture.
Yeah, she looks like an ugly old woman. I'm sorry, but I'm not with the whole she changed, because you just did so many things to these women. You killed your own sister.
Yeah, for real. How do you live with that?
Your sister's not even alive. She can't be here. Yeah. Yeah, like, no.
I never even saw anything about what her family really thought about it.
Yeah.
It would be interesting to see what her family, you know, if her family still talks to her or, like, they think of her. So the problem for the people in the area wasn't just that she was simply back in Canada. It was that she had transformed herself into the soccer mom and began participating in activities at the elementary school that her children attended.
No way.
Yeah. How long it had been, like, since her crimes, it still didn't sit well with the parents.
Hell no. I would have been like, mm-mm.
Right? If I found that out, I'd be like, get away from my children. No.
Literally, I'd be like, we're holding a PTA meeting and everybody's going to vote that you're not allowed on school premises, because no, I don't care how long it's been.
So the local...
You should still have a felony. You still... I thought if you were a felon, you couldn't be around that type of stuff.
I think it's only if your crimes are related to children.
But she was raping and abusing people.
I don't know, though.
Is it different in Canada?
I don't know. That'd be interesting to look up and see what it is. So...
Because, yeah, I don't blame the parents.
Right?
Mm-mm.
I would kind of be a little bit like,
No.
So the local school board even sent out letters to the parents assuring them that their kids were saved and that Carla's mere presence... like, sparked an outrage that sadly will, like, end up affecting her children. Like, it's not her children's fault that she did these awful things, and it's probably gonna follow her children, like, wherever they go.
Oh, yeah.
Sadly. You know what I mean? I feel bad for the children because they didn't ask for her to be their mother. They didn't ask for any of this. They were brought into this world after all this had happened, and...
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I do.
So... Montreal attorney Eric Sutton, he followed up by saying there was nothing that can be done to remove Carla from a neighborhood where she isn't wanted as long as she's done her time and is legally free. He was even quoted saying, like it or not, she has the right to live her life like any other person without being subject to threats and harassments and being hounded to the point that she seeks refuge in her own home and is afraid to leave.
Whatever, let's leave it like that.
I mean...
I want her to be scared to leave.
Yeah, like, I get it, but also she took, like... What she took was kind of called, and it's been called this in the press, like, the deal with the devil. So that makes sense, because she made this plea to get out of all this stuff, even though she was also a big part of it.
Yeah. Ugh, I just don't like it.
And this is kind of what she gets for it.
Like, they're trying to get the bigger bad guy here, but they're both very big bad guys. And, like...
I know.
I don't know. I just don't like her. I don't like her.
Me either. No. So, meanwhile, all this is happening for Carla. Paul is also fighting for his own freedom. And in 2018, he applied for day parole, but was shut down as quickly as it was requested. They literally only deliberated about it for 30 minutes and then were like, no.
Good.
Right?
Yeah, because no.
On a lawyer's behalf of the victim's family, yeah, they reported that there's never been an apology from Paul. There's never been any indication whatsoever of remorse.
Yeah.
Which is true. He has not shown any remorse for anything that he's done. So why should he be allowed out?
For real.
Paul admitted to the court that he hadn't felt anything for his victims at the time of his crimes.
He admitted that?
Yeah, he admitted that he felt nothing.
Was he trying to be like, I'm crazy. I'm a psycho.
Yeah, like, what kind of sick bastard are you?
Yeah.
So Correctional Service Canada's Tim Danson assured the public that even if he had his his right to apply for parole. It's only a standard procedure to allow him to apply every 3 years. Paul is deemed as a dangerous offender and will probably never be released from prison.
Good.
So how do we feel? Is it fair that Carla, who stood by Paul and participated in these heinous crimes, is free to walk the streets?
No, and I think everybody should gang up on her. I think we should all be, like, protesting outside her house. Make her scared to leave her house.
Yeah, because how is it fair that he's in there for life?
Yeah. They both deserve to be in there for life.
Like, he's in there for life, and yeah, and he, I don't know, raped a lot more women than Carla did, but nobody was killed until Carla was a part of it.
For real. That's a good point to make.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, no, he wasn't out here killing. Like, yes, it's still bad that he was raping people, but he wasn't killing people. She, nope. You know, it only started when she did. When she was involved. So this case just kind of blew my mind about how cold and dark this couple was. And, like, could you imagine if they had never met? Carla's sister Tammy would probably still be alive. And so would Kristen French and Leslie Mahaffey. And even if they hadn't met, I know Paul would probably still be raping girls. But hopefully he would have been caught far quicker and no one would have had to die.
Yeah. That's... I can understand now why they're called the Ken and Barbie killers, because they are, like, literally white, blonde, blue-eyed people. So they resemble
Yeah, they look like your typical. Yeah, they look like your typical, like, well-off couple.
Ken and Barbie.
Yeah, Ken and Barbie, legit.
Yeah, fuck them.
So the craziest part to this case to me is that there was so much footage that comes along with this case. So I'm gonna talk about what I like to call the tapes. So on the tapes themselves, they're said to be at least 3.5 hours of footage. It documented the crimes committed against the victims, as well as the further sexual assaults of a fourth victim who survived, known as Jane Doe, that later went on to testify against Paul. Beyond this, it also showed the couple having sex with a prostitute in Atlantic City and drugging another unknown victim.
Wow.
So during the initial search warrant for Paul, which apparently lasted 71 days, the initial tape that they could find was the one relating to Jane Doe, all while the police were restricted from discovering any further tapes by tearing down the walls of Paul's property, given that his connection to the murders at this point were weak, hence the initial restrictions on the warrant itself. So they only found, like, the one tape for now, but later other tapes were discovered about 16 months after the plea deal had been made. They were found in Paul's house in a ceiling light fixture in the upstairs bathroom. Ken Murray, Paul's original lawyer, after viewing the tapes, resigned from his role in 1994, worried about the ethical problems in relation to them and continuing to work with Paul. In response, he also handed them over to his successor, John Rosen, whereby he kept those tapes for about 2 weeks, and then he decided to turn them over to the prosecution. The tapes were later shown in the trial against Paul. So basically, I feel like they found these tapes. They were his lawyers, and they said, oh, shit, this is not going to look good for him.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing we can really do with them. Well, they could have, you know, hid those tapes, but instead, they gave them to the prosecution to use against
Paul. Good, because, like, they saw
basically
those, and they were
the
like,
deal.
This man did some fucked up shit. Like, he does not deserve to be free. I'm turning it over.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So following the conviction of both Paul and Carla, there was so much backlash by the public and media in Canada, giving the seemingly light sentence for such crimes that Carla had committed. And this was further highlighted by how the prosecution came out and stated that the plea deal would have never been agreed to if the tapes had surfaced prior to it being finalized. So basically saying, like, they wouldn't have given Carla a plea deal if they had saw these tapes beforehand.
Yeah.
So she did in fact get really lucky that nobody found these tapes, because the tapes were so incriminating that she would never have gotten that plea deal.
Yeah, because that's what I'm saying, like, that just didn't make no sense. And
yeah, and those tapes would have incriminated both of them.
That's crazy they can't change it.
What'd you say?
I said that's crazy that they can't change it. They can't be like, actually we're gonna take that plea deal back. They're just
right?
Like,
you would think that they
done.
Could, but I guess because it was so finalized.
Yeah. That's
nothing
crazy.
Could really be done. So Since the trial came to an end, the tapes in question were destroyed, and only the transcripts of the tapes survive to this day, unless any copies of the original are ever found. So, although those tapes were deleted, Paul and Carla documented other parts of their life through films. And Discovery Plus has a whole documentary on this case called Ken and Barbie Killers, The Lost Murder Tapes.
Ooh, I want to watch it.
It's a four-part series. Yeah, it's a four-part series broken down between the murders, the tapes, the deal, and the trial. And each episode or each part is about an hour long. And it's kind of cool because it shows, like, clips of them and, like, it has people talking about it. It even has, like, them talking about how they found the tapes.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys should definitely check it out. And I'm going to link some other clips on our blog from, like, more archive footage of Paul and Carla. And there's even a video called Getting to Know Carla, which is a bunch of interviews that she did with the police. And you can tell that she's, like, trying to please them and be all innocent. And it's kind of interesting to see. So I have, like, a couple more photos down here. You can see Paul leaving court, and then you can see Carla leaving court. More pictures of them together, which will also be on our blog. And then you could see the last picture of Carla. Look how evil she looks.
Yeah, for real. I feel like definitely during court, they try to play off a little like, oh, I'm like not that like evil. Look at me with my hair up.
Yeah. You can see how she's dressed
and so,
up.
And him too. So mm-hmm. I low key hate that about
those
going
pictures.
To court where you're like, oh, you need to dress up so that they can like not, I don't know. It's something to like make them be biased towards you and not think so badly of you if you don't look bad.
Oh, yeah. Because if you show up in raggedy clothes, they're going to be like, ew. Yep, they did it.
Right, and it's like, who gives a fuck? Like, it's about the actions that they did that time, right? I think a lot of things should be changed about the court.
Oh, yeah.
Like, maybe we shouldn't let the judge see the other people.
Just
judge
them
off of the facts.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
All right, well.
Because I think it's really hard to make it completely 100% unbiased.
Oh, yeah.
Because you never know if there could be a judge that's racist.
Oh, yeah. There's somehow it's going to be
racist.
Biased. Even if it's like a small way.
Yeah.
But I think that's all I have for this week.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope you guys enjoyed this week's episode.
I did. It spooked to me.
Yeah, it was pretty.
I'm watching out for my sisters now. I'm just kidding.
Right? Like, it's been spooky. Like, I don't understand how somebody could just do that. Like, I don't have any sisters, but, like, I just couldn't imagine.
Like, doing that to your little sister. Hell no.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
No, I'd beat somebody the fuck up.
All right, then, guys. We'll see you on our next episode.
Yep. And as always, everything we talked about today will be linked over on our blog and our Instagram. So don't forget to check it out.
Yeah.
Thank you guys for listening.
Yep. Bye.
Bye.